There is no question about it. Most women are struggling with unprecedented amounts of stress. And one of the ways we can build stress resilience is with adaptogens. The best place to get drinkable adaptogens is Organifi. They have clinical doses of adaptogens and they make them in really good tasting drinks. Adaptogens are herbs or functional mushrooms that help the body adapt to stress. For example, Vitex or Chaseberry can help relieve PMS symptoms like headaches and mood changes. In fact, if you're dealing with cycle irregularities, PMS symptoms, and you just want to support balanced hormones, try their Harmony blend. A lot of you, I've heard so many good things about this. It's like a warm cacao drink and you can drink that nightly. Or you can bring it in, especially like during your luteal phase when PMS symptoms are more prominent. Cordyceps can help improve endurance and energy. And my favorite is Reishi, which helps relax you at night. That's what I drink nightly. It's Organifi Gold, and it is so good as a warm and easy drink at night. And new this year, Organifi just launched Kids Easy Greens. This is awesome for picky eaters or when you just want to supplement your kids' diet with superfood greens. And for immune support, check out Organifi Kids Protect. This is also brand new. It's an immune supportive drink with natural vitamin C, elderberry, and propolis. It's literally everything I give my kids. And it actually tastes really good, so it's easy to get them to take it when they're sick. Support your body, energy, immunity, and stress with Organifi. Organifi takes pride in offering the best tasting superfood products on the market at a price that works out to less than $3 a day. These are clinical doses of adaptogens, so you can actually feel the difference. Go to Organifi.com/wellfed. And use coupon code WELLFED for 20% off your order. That's Organifi, Organifi.com/WELLFED. And use code WELLFED for 20% off. You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com. And you can keep up with the show on Instagram @wellfedwomen. Welcome back to the show. I'm so happy you're here, friends. This is episode number 477, and we are talking about a pretty common topic. It's confusing. Gut health is confusing, and there are so many different facets to gut health, and it's not one size fits all. So I feel like I could probably do hundreds of more episodes on gut health and not even scratch the surface. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Haley Schauff. She is actually a functional practitioner. She's also a podcaster, and she's really passionate about women's health and hormones and healing the gut. Her specialty is healing the gut, and she actually talks quite a bit on her Instagram and her podcast about things that I would like to know more about, specifically parasite cleanses and quote-unquote detoxes, and how do we support detoxification, and just simple questions like how does the gut connect to our metabolism and insulin resistance and all that kind of stuff. So I got to ask her all of those questions today and also your questions. Hopefully this provides some insight and some applicable tips, things that you can do to support your gut health and also figure out what's going on if you're having issues. Before we jump into the episode, I am still working on my adrenal stress supplement. I am very passionate about adaptogens. They have done wonders for me in particular, and I am experimenting with a trio. I actually don't love taking adaptogens, and from a lot of the research and reading that I've been doing on adaptogens, I'm finding that using adaptogens singularly, so just taking ashwagandha, isn't as beneficial as maybe taking smaller doses of a variety of adaptogens based on what your needs are. So I am specifically looking to create a supplement that provides daily support. So it's something you would take in the morning if you are feeling like you are stressed, which honestly, most of us are. And we go through seasons of higher stress times, whether it's a death in the family or postpartum or our kids aren't sleeping or they're sick or the holidays or whatever. I love bringing in smaller doses of adaptogens in a synergistic way that allow me to not feel exhausted and fatigued and allow me to support my adrenals and get over that little hump so that I can actually sleep well on the back end and not have, you know, headaches or feel some of those stress-related symptoms. So it is going to be called adrenal stress daily support. It's for the exhausted and stressed out. I'm going to be using some of your feedback in this process. If you want to be involved, go to coconutsandkettlebells.com/minerals. That's my well minerals list. And I love hearing what you guys have to say. I get feedback on colors and capsules and dosages and all that kind of stuff. So, and I really do appreciate it. So jump on my list if you want to be involved in the process and get first dibs on when it comes out, because I will do a pretty big discount. So now that that is out of the way, let's jump into my interview with Dr. Haley Schoff. Well, welcome, Dr. Haley. I'm so happy to have you here. And we are going to be talking about a pretty popular topic. I did get a lot of questions when I polled people about gut health. But like I was mentioning to you before, I think it's something that a lot of us know a lot about. The application and actually knowing what to do is the most confusing part. So I'm really excited to have you here to unpack all of this.
Yeah. And that's my favorite part to always talk about is, okay, here's the things, but then how can we implement it on a regular or consistent basis, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to get results.
Yeah. So Dr. Haley, did you grow up or did you have gut issues that you particularly were working on to resolve personally? Or is this just something that you found like a lot of clients were having and you wanted to know more about it and dig deeper?
I'd say yes. And the fact that I didn't realize like the extent to how much gut was also related to so many other things that I was experiencing, hormonal issues, irregular periods, skin issues. So yes, I did have gut issues, but I feel like I saw them manifest in kind of some different ways. I didn't really ever struggle with bloating or, I don't know, I guess maybe here and there from eating inflammatory foods, but with kind of getting into the realm of skin health and hormones, you see how much of an impact gut health has on it. And throughout my own journey, I was on antibiotics as a kid. I've been on birth control. So gut healing has definitely been, I've been a guinea pig on myself and experimented with a lot of different things. And because it's such a gateway to everything else, your skin, your hormones, your thyroid. I mean, so many different things. It's always, even if you don't have inherently gut symptoms, that's always a place that we're going to want to look and address. So yes, I definitely did a lot of kind of internal work on myself and experimenting and healing. And I feel like I still am, you know, it's always a constant work in progress.
Totally. I know I think you'd be hard pressed to find a millennial who hasn't gone through like so many rounds of antibiotics, especially as a kid. Mm-hmm. And even when you become an adult, things happen and you do, things are going to negatively impact your gut microbiome. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we find ourselves in situations that aren't ideal and we have to kind of crawl out of those situations. And like you said, continually be working on our gut health. One of the first topics I want to discuss and how it relates to gut health is our metabolism. You actually talk about this a little bit. Metabolism is kind of it's pretty pertinent, I think, for millennial women. We're noticing changes. A lot of women listening are entering the 40-somethings and things change. And our assumption is, man, what's going on with our metabolism? On the other side of that, there are a lot of women, and I'm sure you've seen this, but a lot of women who struggle with their metabolism because they've under-eaten for so long. They haven't supplied their body with the proper nutrition because of diet culture and growing up in this thin, you know, centric society, especially in the early 2000s. So this is a really good two-part question. Like, how does the microbiome impact our metabolism? But also, how does the things that we do impact, like, that, like under-eating and all that kind of stuff affect the microbiome?
Ooh, okay. That's a good question. So I'll answer the first part of how does our gut health impact our metabolism? So there's actually specific types of microbes that we can tie directly to our body's ability to stabilize blood sugar and efficiently be able to utilize fuel for substrate. And specifically, acromantia is a really, really big one. So I see this a lot with people who struggle with blood sugar imbalance, PCOS, and even just maybe like kind of higher end of range blood sugar. So their body, when your blood sugar is constantly high like that, your body's never efficiently able to burn body fat. So that's why it's like, no matter what I'm doing, it's like, I feel like I can't lose weight. And well, if your blood sugar is high, why would your body want to burn fat or body fat? Because it doesn't need to. So acromantia is a really, really key species in our gut that can be wiped away for various reasons: medication, stress, improper diet, lack of nutrients, lack of diversity, but also different types of short chain fatty acids that we can get through a lot of just really great whole food prebiotic sources that can be void in a more processed or nutrient void diet. Our body's not being able to get these substrates to be able to make these things. So yes, back in kind of the 2000s, when it's like, all we care about is calories, 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 you know, 100 calorie snacks. Well, people are choosing foods that are very low in prebiotics, low in good, healthy fiber, low in healthy fats that help to build, you know, everything in our body. And we're just very low in nutrients in general. And to your point of how metabolism can affect, or how our calorie choices can affect metabolism, you know, when we undereat over time, that just lowers that metabolic set point. I don't think people they're very surprised to see how much I eat when I eat, because I eat a lot, because when you're lowering that over time, your body just kind of lowers it to be able to match. So people who eat 1200, 1300 calories, and they're like, I can't eat any less than this because I'm not going to be able to eat anything. But if I eat anything more, it's because your body's thermostat, I guess, for lack of better words, has kind of lowered to be able to match that.
Yeah. Oh, so this, what is it? You said
acromantia.
Acromantia. So that is a specific type of bacteria that like a beneficial microbe in our body.
Yep.
So when you see, how do you know if that has been wiped out? Are you looking at that on like a gut test?
Yeah, you can see it through various stool tests. Yep. Okay. I mean, that's really the only way you would know if it's high or low is if you got a stool sample and were able to see like what your microbiome looks like. Sometimes if people are struggling with blood sugar imbalance or things like that, I will supplement with it if I don't know what's off, and we can just see. I mean, there's been some cases where I had someone where she just like could never get her fasting blood sugar in a decent level. And we added that in, and like, it's crazy just how that helped, you know, bring it out of the hundreds and into the low 90s and high 80s. Yeah, it's cool.
What are you supplementing? Is it a prebiotic or what are you using?
It's a probiotic. So you can like straight supplement with acromantia, but you also can help feed the acromantia with prebiotic food. So, you know, you can supplement with the microbe itself, but then you can also help to feed that microbe so that you can continue to build it in your system with good prebiotics, which you can get prebiotics through various whole foods and different types of fibers, soluble and insoluble fibers, as well as, you know, you can supplement with a prebiotic as well.
Interesting. I love that. Mm-hmm. So what is actually, let's dive into prebiotics and probiotics. And I want to talk about postbiotics because that's something people are mentioning more. And I don't think we've ever discussed it. So what you mentioned, the difference between prebiotics and probiotics, what specifically should, you know, I think most people listening know the idea behind prebiotic foods, kombucha, kefir, whatever. Mm-hmm. Do we as a society, do you think we should be taking a probiotic on a daily basis and actually be supplementing with it? Or are probiotic foods enough?
I think it totally depends on the person, and it totally depends on the state of their microbiome and the symptoms that they're having, because there's certain types of probiotics out there that truly are a waste of people's money. If you have to already buy it in a fridge and it's already so incredibly stable or like unstable, like if it's not refrigerated, it's going to die. That's a waste of your money because it's not going to make it through your stomach acid. So there's a lot of people that just waste money on probiotics because they're not able to make it through the GI lining. They're not able to make it past your stomach acid. They might not even make it through the digestive enzymes in your mouth. That's not the case. And I don't mean to sound discouraging, but like, no, there's a lot of people that, you know, will go to the drugstore and they're like, oh yeah, I got put on an antibiotic, so I'm just picking up a probiotic. And it's like, well, you know, is that the right type? I'm a really big fan of spore-based probiotics because they're essentially dormant until they hit your microbiome. So they're able to withstand any type of environment that they might go through with a shipping process and the packaging process and sitting on the shelf process, because the shelf stability and like the impact of them being able to survive and get to your GI lining, which is exactly where we want it to be, is a lot higher. Obviously with probiotic rich foods, they can sometimes be denatured a little bit with stomach acid and stuff as well, but that tends to be less of an issue just because it's generally a live culture, which I can see how it can be confusing. But back to your question, you asked about, oh, do we really need the probiotics? So I think it really depends. I mean, I don't think many people, especially our generation that was on a lot of years of antibiotics, we probably didn't have a lot of great probiotics that we were getting supplemented with. So, you know, unless we were that crunchy kid eating sauerkraut and like non-food dyed yogurt loaded with sugar, I mean, maybe we're in a good point. I don't know. I mean, but I think of like all the different things from our childhood and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, there's a lot of kind of rebuilding that might need to be done. So for me personally, like I do kind of cycle one in and out, but I really do make probiotic rich foods a very big staple in my diet consistently. And the cool part about it is you don't generally don't need a lot. You don't need a lot of kefir to get a lot of probiotics. You don't need a ton of sauerkraut or kimchi to get like, you just need it, you know, a tiny, tiny bit. So that could be like a really good supplement to your food. And then if you feel like you need it, you know, you can always, you know, cycle in or take for periods of time, you know, a good spore-based probiotic.
Yeah. Okay. So what are postbiotics? I keep hearing this thing drop. Is it all that different than probiotics and prebiotics? Like what?
So essentially postbiotics are what the bacteria in your gut like are fermenting. So it's essentially a byproduct of your microbiome. And it's really cool because there's a lot of research on postbiotics for things like H. pylori and different types of infections or like kind of GI infections and things like H. pylori that it could be really effective for. I mean, really, if you've got a good, strong microbiome and you're eating good prebiotic rich foods, your body's going to be making a lot of postbiotics by itself, right? Like a healthy microbiome is naturally going to be putting that out. But think of all the people whose guts might be compromised or they have these kind of underlying infections. Postbiotics can be really cool. They're very gentle too. I generally don't find a lot of people get die-off reactions or any types of imbalances or anything with them. So it's a cool though, because it's definitely, I really haven't used it much minus kind of the last maybe 2, maybe 3 years, but it's definitely like a newer avenue of mm-hmm. kind of the microbiome support.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so talk to me about, I'm going to switch gears a little bit because I do get a lot of questions about acne, mm-hmm. especially as an adult, something mm-hmm. we definitely see pubescent teens get, you know, most of us as teenagers dealt with it. What is the deal with acne and how does that relate to gut health, especially when we're considering adults?
It's so frustrating because I work with a lot of women who are experiencing it. And honestly, I've been on my own journey with healing acne from post pill to even kind of just even struggling with it intermittently. It's very frustrating because you're like, oh, okay, I got it. If I was, you know, 12, 13, I'm not anymore. You know, I don't want to have to worry about stuff like this. And rightfully so. And I think a lot of this stems back to things in our youth or medications like chronic overprescription of birth control, chronic overprescription of Accutane when we were young, all these different things that have a lasting impact on our detoxification pathways, our gut microbiome. And that's not to say shame on you if you went on those things, like now you just have to reap the consequences. No, by no means. But I think going forward, we'll see a shift and less of a push for those things because of some of the things that we are currently going through and seeing as adults that we don't want kind of further generations or our kids to have to be able to go through. You know, we learn through our own process. Adult acne is very multifaceted. I mean, it could definitely very much so be due to hormonal stuff, maybe super high androgens due to imbalanced blood sugar. It could be due to high estrogen or estrogen dominance. It could be due to cortisol levels constantly being dysregulated. I mean, and especially when people are seeing acne a lot all month long and there's not a hormonal rhythm to it, like you're not breaking out before your period, you're not breaking out around ovulation, it's kind of all month long. It could be related to certain foods you're eating. It could be related to different gut infections that you might have, SIBO, candida, parasites, H. pylori is one that I kind of mentioned before. But it's such an art in trying to figure out sometimes root cause, because it doesn't always mean that there's one, there can be many, and a lot of those different things can overlap.
Are there commonalities that you see with clients that have acne and gut issues? Like, do you find that it's like always SIBO or more commonly SIBO or more commonly high androgens? Like, is there a connection?
I'd say it's a mix. I mean, honestly, everything that I just mentioned, I've seen all of it. Like I've seen all of those could be kind of root cause. So I can't say I see maybe one more than another. I have seen a lot of instances where chronic gut infections that maybe we don't show up on testing, such as parasites. I mean, not that that can't show up on testing, but it generally doesn't. I have clinically seen a huge impact that clearing that can have on people's skin when they didn't even think that they had that, you know? So that's pretty cool. I mean, I would say that's something that a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have that. I've never gone to a third world country. I've never, you know, traveled abroad. And it's like, it doesn't matter because if you have dogs, we do warm our dogs very regularly. And that's not a weird thing, but your dogs lick you on the face. They sleep in your bed. They're, you know, they're one with your microbiome too. So it's just, you know, it's funny that we in our society think it's just such a weird thing when you go to so many other countries and it's just very accustomed that that's just something that they know. I mean, they're very, you walk barefoot outside. I mean, they're microscopic. I mean, we just have evolved with them, but our internal homeostasis and our internal defense systems, our stomach acid is weaker. We're nutrient void in certain things to be able to kind of help just our body's protection. So we can be sometimes become a little bit more overburdened with them. And that was a huge breakthrough with my own journey. Like I said, I experiment a lot on myself, on my own guinea pig. I'm never going to ask somebody generally to do something that I haven't tried or have done. So I'm not going to parasite cleanse people. If I didn't do it, I did it. And I was like, wow, I see a lot of really interesting things that I can start implementing into people that I work with. And not to say that's everybody's quick fix. In some people's cases, it has been where it's like, holy cow, their skin was so inflamed and I don't know how we got it here, but we did. But then there's some people where, you know, there's a lot of different layers we got to work through as well. So it's, there's no such thing as a quick fix, but it's nice to know that you have different avenues that you can look into.
I have tried almost every probiotic on the market over the last decade, and I have found one that has made a massive difference in my digestive health. And I think I know why. As someone who has really struggled with digestive issues since I was a kid, I notice a huge difference when I'm taking a quality probiotic versus when I'm not. I have been searching for a probiotic that takes a combination of evidence-based strains, including both lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. And I also wanted one that was proven to make it through stomach acid and into the digestive tract. And I have found that in Doctor's Choice probiotic from MD Logic Health. Ever since I started taking it about a year ago now, I have not had any digestive issues. I'm talking no cramping, no bloating, no IBS, even when I eat out or eat gluten-free treats. And here's why. Doctor's Choice is formulated with 30 billion live beneficial bacteria per capsule. It has a mixture of 10 lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. Research actually shows that when these are taken together, it's anti-inflammatory. It actually helps your digestive tract. It also contains FOS, which is a powerful prebiotic. Doctor's Choice is made by MD Logic Health. It's manufactured in a USA GMP FDA registered facility. It's tested for potency, and it has a special delayed release technology to ensure that it actually makes it into your digestive tract, which I feel like has made a huge difference for me. If you struggle with chronic digestive issues, leaky gut, feel like you get sick all the time, or just want to optimize your body's ability to break down food, including protein, I highly recommend it. Go to mdlogichealth.com/doctorschoice and use coupon code WFProbiotic for 10% off. Again, that's mdlogichealth.com/DRSCHOICE and use coupon code WF Probiotic for 10% off. I definitely want to dive into parasites more, but I have one question relating to acne that I think comes up a lot. And you mentioned food intolerances or certain foods causing acne to become more inflamed. A lot of people will tell you to stop eating dairy because it can cause acne or it causes flare up and skin issues. Is it the dairy causing the problem, or is it more a gut infection that's unresolved that then when you put dairy through that system, it causes the problem?
Likely the second part, because interestingly enough, a lot of dairy sensitivities or intolerances to dairy actually can come from pathogen overgrowth, including parasites. Essentially, it's what we're reacting to in a lot of those cases is the waste of those things consuming the dairy. So that's not to say there are some people that, because dairy can increase IGF-1, some people are very triggered by IGF-1, that can trigger breakouts. That's not to say that everybody will benefit from cutting out dairy. For me, I didn't. I didn't see any change. I consume it very regularly. I consume it in raw forms. I do it, you know, very as unadulterated and unprocessed as possible. It doesn't affect me, but that's not saying maybe it is inflammatory to some person. And maybe when they clear some gut infections and heal the inflammation, maybe they can add it back in. Maybe they can't. You know, we're all very bio-individual. And that's where sometimes these, you need to cut this out if you have this, or you need to cut this out. Sometimes it can make people very confused. But that's not to say that some people can't benefit from minimizing it. It's just, you know, it's a little bit sometimes more complex than that.
Yeah. Okay, so you talked about parasites. We can get it from a dog licking her face or whatever. I know you can get it from eating sushi. Do you think everybody has parasites? Is that what you're getting at?
I mean, there's been a lot of people that I really highly respect, and I forget exactly who quoted this, but I mean, essentially they said, if you have a pulse, you have parasites. I don't know how accurate that is. I will say, in pretty much every single person I've ever worked with, who is actively looking for them when they're cleansing, they're finding something. Sometimes they're microscopic and we'll never notice them. Obviously, we can only notice the ones that are visible to the naked eye, but there are a lot of ones that are microscopic that, you know, you would never know if you got rid of if you didn't test for it, or a lot of times they don't show up on testing. It's hard to say. You know, I'm sure if there's someone who's cleaned their food better than anybody in the world and doesn't leave their house and never walks barefoot, has never owned a dog, has never traveled, they might not. I don't know. But for a lot of people who do just live in a modern world, even if you don't travel, it's by no means uncommon. And it's really crazy to see. There's this naturopath, I really love her content. She has been diving into a lot of like different tumor and cancer cases where a lot of the times they've been driven by parasites, which is just, it's wild. It's like a whole rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one of those people that's like, every ailment that you have, oh, parasites. No. Yeah. But gosh, they do sometimes, if they are not in the proper balance, I can see how they can create some issues, or just any type of overgrowth or infection. You know, when our body's not the one in the driver's seat, I can see how that's creating, you know, creating these issues.
Are there like clear signs that you have? And you said overgrowth. So is the problem happens when our body can't actually keep them in check, right? So like if they're become overgrown, and I know there are like a lot of different types of parasites. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's like just loves parasite cleanses, and she says things to me and I'm like, cool. She's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I found this in my poop today. And I'm like, yay.
That's me.
Yeah. So love her to pieces. She loves going through her poop and finding them. I'm sure she doesn't love it. She just likes the effect of getting it out. And I can understand that. So I know there are a lot of different types of species. Are there different symptoms that are like, oh, this is an overgrowth of a hookworm or whatever? Or is it really just all over the place?
I mean, yeah. Potentially. I mean, obviously like Giardia is a big one for like food poisonings and like chronic diarrhea, like traveler's diarrhea, that type of a stuff. For certain types of like cystic acne, Ascaris and roundworms can cause a lot of issues with like lymphatic congestion. Cause a lot of what's crazy is like these things aren't just in your microbiome. They can be, you know, throughout, which yeah. It freaks people out. But at the same time, you know, like this is just, you know, we've evolved with this kind of stuff. Like it is what it is. If you don't want to look and you don't want to know they're there, that's okay. You don't have to. But I'd say that's a big one that I just pay attention to, just because I do work so much with like skin clearing and acne, that's like a big correlation that I've seen in terms of bloating and stuff like that too. I mean, a lot of the symptoms really do overlap for sure.
And what are the most common symptoms of you have parasites or your parasites are out of control?
Again, a lot of overlapping with just other stuff, but like huge ones that can be teeth grinding or jaw clenching, especially like anytime a symptom is worse during a full moon, which some people aren't in tune with that. Some people are very in tune with the full moon because maybe it correlates with their menstrual cycle, or they just like the different energy shifts that can happen with stuff like that. It kind of depends on how hippie and crunchy you might be. But if you do notice jaw clenching, anal itching, bloating is worsening, or cravings are worsening around the time of a full moon, it could definitely be. Chronic constipation sometimes can be linked to these things, acne, even menstrual cycle issues, parasites, or PCOS, endometriosis. Not saying that that's always the root cause, but it's always something that I like to address, especially if we're not moving the needle in another way. I'm like, hey, let's just make sure that we can check this out and see. I'd say like kind of tall tale signs like anal itching, jaw clenching, kind of set it apart than just like standard GI discomfort. Like SIBO doesn't have stuff like that. Candida doesn't have stuff like that. A lot of other gut issues can have cravings and uncontrollable cravings for things as well. But especially if you can kind of like pay attention to when it might be happening, that can also help to pinpoint it a little bit more.
And what's the science behind the full moon? Because when I first heard that, I was like, huh? but it actually makes sense.
The serotonin. So we there's more serotonin production and it's going to inhibit our melatonin production. So essentially, and they say that there's something with a gravitational pull of it too, like that we wouldn't feel, but those types of, pathogens and things like that can notice, but essentially higher points of serotonin, lower points of melatonin, because the brightness is obviously impacting our melatonin, increasing more serotonin, that allows those things to be a little bit more active during that time.
Okay. How do parasite cleanses work? And like, what are the steps that you take to get rid of them?
So a lot of people do it wrong. A lot of people will just say, okay, I'm freaked out. I'm going to go online and I'm going to buy a parasite cleanse. Wrong. Most people have horrible or sluggish drainage pathways. Most people, you know, don't sweat properly. Like the reason that they're struggling with a lot of these symptoms is because their body's just drainage and detoxification pathways aren't working as appropriately. So if you start then adding killing herbs on top of that, you are going to feel horrible. And you're going to have these detox reactions and you're going to be turned off by the whole process. So the first thing you want to be doing is working on drainage. Like you want to have your body be able to just eliminate things on a daily basis as it should before you start adding more burden to that load. So do you have 1 to 3 bowel movements a day? If you don't, we got to start working on that. How is your kidney liver function? Are you making sure you're adequately hydrated? Does your lymphatic system move? Do you get edema? Do you get lymphatic acne? Do you do any dry brushing or castor oil packs, rebounding movement? Like a lot of this stuff can be lifestyle wise. I always like to add a binder. So I use the Cellcor line for my parasite stuff. And I like to use one of their binders to just get people on for a few weeks, because if they've never done any type of detox in their life, and then we start kind of helping to just bind stuff that might naturally occur and be there. Some people are like, that's enough where they just need to focus on that for a little bit. Other people who might not be as sensitive, they can tolerate some extra liver support. Maybe they do some glutathione or NAC and milk thistle, kind of just gentle liver support to make sure the liver bile ducts are flowing, that's flowing into the colon so that you can have regular bowel movements. Magnesium can be really helpful, especially to move some of those bowels as well. But assuming that's working well, if you can tolerate that type of stuff for, you know, a few weeks, then you can work into some of the anti-parasitic herbs, which I generally use more products that are like more herbal based, like black walnut's a really big one. I like Mimosa pudica seed because it kind of forms like a gel when it mixes with your intestinal fluids, and just kind of it works through your gel, your intestines is a gel to kind of pick stuff up, which is really helpful. So essentially, it's all herbal based products that you'd use to kind of help kill off the pathogens. Then you continue on the binder to just make sure, okay, we're binding up whatever these pathogens might be releasing. Because we do know that parasites can hold on to chronic infections such as Lyme and other co-infections. They can hold on to mold, candida, things like that, that when they're dying off and that's being released, like we don't want that to be recirculating and leave us feeling like crap. So generally I take a very conservative approach. I want people to go low and slow because you're not going to get anywhere quicker by just going as heavy as you can with dosing and, you know, hoping that you get quicker results, because you're likely going to be feeling not super great, especially if you've never gone into this before. So I definitely, because it's a little bit more complex, that's why I just don't recommend that people just go out and just get whatever they see there, because a lot of times they might not be feeling super hot if they haven't done the prep work.
Yeah. So, man, is this something that, so what happens? So say your drainage pathways aren't open, which I see this happen a lot with people doing all types of things, detoxes, all this kind of stuff. They're not sweating. They're not moving. They're not exercising. They have poor detoxification because haven't supported their liver with nutrients, like basic stuff, right?
Yep.
What happens when you don't have those drainage pathways open and you try to do a parasite cleanse or even like a detox protocol?
Mm-hmm. So big things that I personally see, headaches, flu-like symptoms. I see a lot of people who get skin rashes, that things that look like dermatitis, especially like perioral dermatitis, or if they have eczema, they're probably going to get a flare. Maybe if you're acne prone, you're going to get some acne because your body's just trying to push it through in some type of a way. And for people who are prone to having it come out in their skin, it's just going to come out through your skin. So if your main goal of going into this is to heal your eczema or to heal your dermatitis or your acne, the drainage is likely something you're already struggling with anyways, because your body's already trying to push stuff through your skin anyways. So that needs to be even more of a focus if you don't want it to happen. Now, not to deter people, but like, I always say, like, those are real symptoms and things that people can feel. But if you are really working through the proper steps on like doing all the right drainage things and you're working into it slowly, slow and steady wins the race, those things are obviously still possible, but it's so much less likely of a chance if you've done that work.
Yeah. So should we all be doing parasite cleanses? And is this something you recommend doing regularly? So like yearly or whatever?
I think it depends. I think, you know, depending on symptoms, depending on your goals, depending on maybe if you're kind of listening to this and you're like, yep, that's me. It's not likely a bad idea. It's not like doing something like where you would never want to go on an antibiotic if you don't think you have a bacterial infection. It's not that type of a situation. It's not like it's going to negatively affect you in some type of a way. Of course, killing, and like people who are just obsessed with constantly detoxing, that's not great either. But for me, I generally work through, it depends. I mean, I just went to Costa Rica. I feel totally fine. I'll probably do another one in the spring. I generally do one like 2 to 3 times a year or based on symptoms. I mean, you know, I eat sushi. I think we ate ceviche every single day that we were in Costa Rica. Like, I know that I'm eating raw fish. And so I know that my exposure might be there more than someone who doesn't eat stuff like that, you know? So I kind of base it off of my exposure, my symptoms, and that type of a stuff. But I don't think it's going to hurt anybody. I'm sure there's people like, obviously, please, if you're pregnant, please do not do a parasite cleanse. Don't do any type of detox. That's what you need to be doing in well before conception. There's so many people that are like, I'm pregnant, but like, I want a detox for the baby. Sister Sledge, we should have done that like 6 to 12 months ago. You know, and it's okay if you didn't do that and like you didn't know going into pregnancy. No, it's okay, but we don't want to be doing any type. Please don't detox when you're breastfeeding and postpartum. Please don't do that. Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, depending on like, there's no other lying contraindications or health conditions, you know, I think it benefits a lot of people.
Yeah. Before we jump into our questions, I want to talk about detoxes in general, since we've mentioned that a couple times. There's quite a bit of controversy around it all, which I really do find kind of funny. Like,
I do too.
It's just, yeah. Obviously, our body does detoxify toxins. We have organs that are dedicated to doing that. It seems that people really, there's two different camps, right? There's the, I have toxins stored in my liver and I need to do this cleanse to get them all out. And then there's people who say, you don't need detoxes. You don't need to support your body's detoxification. Your body does it just fine. What organs, can you just talk us through what organs are actually involved in detoxification? And what do you mean when you say support detoxification, and how does that work, you know, holistically?
Yeah. Biggest one being our colon. Our bowels are a huge way that we eliminate toxins. And so if you're not having 1 to 3 bowel movements a day, a lot of stuff can continue to recirculate. I see that a lot with hormonal stuff, especially things like estrogen dominance and things like that. Likewise, we can also release things through our kidneys and our urine. Our liver obviously processes a lot of things via the gallbladder and bile. So if you don't have a gallbladder, you already need to put a little bit of extra emphasis on your liver for healthy bile production and, you know, a little support in that, where a lot of people have just had their gallbladder removed and, you know, they don't think anything of it and the downstream effects. Our skin is a huge organ that we can detoxify from as well via sweat, through either exercise, hot baths. Obviously, infrared saunas and sauna use is huge. I know that everybody doesn't have one and you don't need to have one to be able to sweat through your skin. You can take a hot bath. You can do some zone 2 cardio or just increase your heart rate enough that you can sweat. And if you don't sweat, that's likely a good indicator that maybe some stuff is sluggish. So you need to maybe support your lymphatic system, which you can do through movement, dry brushing, rebounding or jump roping, even just like manual lymphatic massage, like kind of just very light pressure on areas where there's lymph nodes. And to your point about the people in the camp where they don't think that detoxification is necessary, I will tell you firsthand, as someone who is a slow detoxifier, some people need some extra love. You know, there's different genetic mutations that can impact our body's ability to detoxify, like methylation or COMT, that can slow our body's just own ability. Plus, you have no idea what people's previous exposure to things like birth control or pharmaceuticals or NSAIDs, what that looks like, that can impact maybe their body's ability. I think looking kind of from my perspective, I was like, why am I always so sensitive to these candles or these scents? Like, I just know that I struggle with it a little bit more than somebody else. And so for me, that's been a huge thing on my journey where I know that I need to put a little bit more effort into it maybe than somebody else, because it's just something that maybe genetically or just because of life that I struggle with. And so I think just saying that statement, you don't need to detoxify, that's what your body does. Well, some people's own systems aren't doing it super efficiently. So to just say you have a liver, yeah, but your liver might not be doing a great job, or you might be chronically constipated and you might not be releasing. So yeah, those people do need some extra support. And so I just think it's irresponsible for like some people to just say, it's irresponsible both ways. Like you don't always need to be, you know, in a cleanse and in a detox, but at the same time, there are some people that might need just some extra love and some extra support.
And obviously those organs are detoxifying, but like, do you live in the modern world? Like, I mean, the amount of exposure that we have,
that's a whole other point.
Unprecedented. Like our body is trying to constantly, and if it, like, let's just say the normal person in America, maybe not thinking about their diet or the amount of, they're not filtering their air or not doing the, you know, filtering their water. They, you know, are likely taking a lot of prescription medications and maybe taking birth control and maybe taking, you know, ibuprofen or Tylenol on a regular basis and, you know, drinking a lot of alcohol or smoking. And all of those things can overburden your liver. It's too much for your body.
Everyone's got that bucket
process.
And, you know, like how quickly are you filling that bucket?
It's full. It's overflowing. And so I think as holistic minded people, we're always thinking, yeah, how can I be emptying the bucket a little bit as things are filling in as they do on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Of course, we're going to want to limit what we can. You know, if you're mindful of this stuff, you obviously want to limit what you can. You want to filter your air, filter your water, all that stuff. But there is just some things in life that I can't control if my neighbor is going to spray crap on their grass. Like I can't control that, you know, like I can control what I can control. And I try my hardest to not stress about things I can't control. But because I can't control everybody, I do take a little bit more action for myself, depending on what I'm doing. If I'm traveling or, you know, if I saw that someone just put Roundup on their lawn, you know, I throw maybe a little extra support on there, you know, I think in the health space too, it can feel very toxic of being overly obsessed with some things. And I don't think that's great either. It's not good to be obsessive one way or the other. I think it's just good to be mindful, good to be conscious, and good to control what you can.
Did you know that most women aren't getting enough essential amino acids? That can cascade into long-term issues because they're vital for muscle protein synthesis, which is the way your body builds and maintains muscle, tissue repair, and nutrient absorption. Our body is continually breaking down protein and then building new protein throughout the day. And if you don't have the resources you need, you lose muscle. If you're a woman in her 30s like me and you're worried about age-related muscle loss, as little as 3 grams of essential amino acids per day is going to be the easiest way to support muscle maintenance. Kian Aminos is my fundamental supplement for fitness. I personally have been taking Kian Aminos capsules daily, both on workout days and on off days, to support my body's amino acid requirements. I have personally noticed a difference in my strength and my ability to recover from workouts from taking the essential amino acids daily and also incorporating their creatine. Kian is backed by over 20 years of clinical research, has the highest quality ingredients, no fillers or junk, and undergoes rigorous quality testing. They make essential amino acids in capsules and powders. You can mix them with water and the powders taste really good. And yes, their essential amino acids contain all 9 essential amino acids. If you want to naturally boost energy, build lean muscle, and enhance athletic performance, get Kian Aminos. Save 20% on all subscriptions, which is what I have. Just go to getkian.com/wellfed. It's risk-free. There is a 60-day money-back guarantee, which I love. Again, that's getkian, getkion.com/wellfed to get 20% off my favorite essential amino acids. All right, so this question is from Belle Houghton. She says, or he says, what does inflamed gut markers mean? My doctor said that that's the result of my Dutch test. How do we naturally fix gut inflammation?
Okay, so looking at the Dutch test, the Dutch is dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. So they must be talking, there's a gut marker on the organic acids. It's the indican marker. It's essentially if there could be like overgrowth or dysbiosis. That's the only gut marker that we can see on the Dutch test. So they must be referring to that. So if that's high, it likely means that there maybe is some type of overgrowth or dysbiosis. Like, it's hard to know because, like, there's so many different gut markers, and that's only one of, you know, a bunch that we can test for. But I would, if that came back high, I would say I want to get a little bit deeper look into the microbiome and see exactly what's high. Is this creating inflammation? There's other gut markers that we can look at on stool testing, like the, like, we can look at your IgG. We can look at if you have, like, wheat sensitivities through anti-gliadin. We can see what your intestinal barrier looks like through, there's a few different markers depending on, like, if you do the GI map or gut zoomer. Calprotectin is a big one that we can look at for inflammation. So those are things, like, on a specific stool test I'm looking for specific to inflammation. But if there is some type of dysbiosis, there's likely some type of inflammation as well.
Hmm. So what tests do you prefer when it comes to assessing gut health? Is there one that you use most often?
Either a gut zoomer or a GI map. Because I'm in New York, the gut zoomer is nice because people that I work with in New York, we can get it in New York. But either I think the gut zoomer and the GI map are ones that I'm ordering pretty regularly for stool test stuff.
Okay. I'll link to both of those in the show notes. That's the first time I've ever heard of gut zoomer. So what you're saying is if you have a gut issue, if you're dealing with gut symptoms and, like, that it's caused by dysbiosis, mm-hmm. you have gut inflammation. It's the inflammation is the result.
I mean, likely, there's some type of inflammation. If they're experiencing any type of bloating or reflux or anything like that, I mean, that's pretty much just saying there is some type of inflammation anyways. But there's people who, you know, maybe a gut marker comes back high, but everything else looks good. Maybe their intestinal barrier is fine. So I think to say in absolutes, it's kind of hard, but I'd say in a lot of cases, if there is some type of high amount of dysbiosis, there's likely some type of inflammation there.
Yeah. I'm trying to make you come up with absolutes. Sorry.
I'm sorry. It's so hard because it's so
I'm like, but tell me.
I know.
Sorry. Okay. So TDP 878 says, I hear that food intolerances are strongly linked to leaky gut and that you tend to become more sensitive to foods that you eat the most. Is this true?
Okay. Another non-absolute, not always. Like, so it depends. Like, I don't run a lot of food sensitivity testing because to me, if you have a lot of food sensitivities, it just, like, a lot of just reds, yellows, reds, like a lot of stuff's lighting up. That's like, we should have invested the money into a stool test so we could see exactly where the inflammation's coming from and what's driving it. Because to have all these sensitivities, it's not just the fact that your body's just revolting to all this food it's revolting to that food for a reason. There's a reason that you have sensitivities to certain foods. Now, do I think gluten is the best thing for everybody? No, honestly, I don't think it's really beneficial for anyone, whether you can tolerate it or not. It's very inflammatory and to most people, even if you're not having symptoms. It's very different here in the States versus how wheat and things like that are eaten in Europe. That's why a lot of people can tolerate it better. They lose inflammation. I digress. To that point, also, you know, if you have a lot of food sensitivities, that doesn't mean that you're going to be allergic to that food forever. If you go in, you heal the gut inflammation, you heal the lining, you support the intestinal barrier. A lot of times people can tolerate a lot of those foods. To the also question of, oh, I heard if you eat a lot of these foods, you can give yourself sensitivities. Yes and no, it depends on your gut barrier. I mean, you eat bread every day and you eat wheat every day and you're going to be micro amounts of inflammation on the gut barrier. Yeah, wheat is likely going to be a sensitivity to you if it's something that you're eating a lot of.
Yeah. This is from Paula Weiss. She says, I'd love a refresh on recovery after antibiotics and to hear about gut health and insulin resistance. So let's just focus on recovery after antibiotics for right now. I think this is such a great question. It got a lot of people saying, like, oh, I want to know more about that too. So what do you recommend as, like, a general protocol?
Sure. So I would say, if you have to go on antibiotics, depending on, you can always take a probiotic 2 hours away from antibiotic doses when you are on. So first of all, I'll preface this. This isn't medical information. This is what I would do if I was going to be on an antibiotic, right? I would probably take whatever the antibiotic dose when I was told, and then I would, you know, 2 hours away from that, maybe take some probiotic doses and definitely help with whole food probiotics. I kind of know that's a little wash in the bucket because it's kind of negating some things. You definitely don't want to take your probiotic with the antibiotic, but after being on some type of like restorative formula, I really, really, really like Microbiome Labs Restoriflora. It's got a really great mix of both spore-based plus Saccharomyces boulardii to help a lot with yeast balance that can happen a lot after antibiotic exposure. That's like my go-to post-antibiotic support. You know, you can take that maybe morning and night and then take it for 30 days. And then you can always taper back to even just taking once a day and then switch back to a standard probiotic. But like after that time of antibiotics, that is a time where I don't care how many whole food probiotics you're eating, it's not a bad idea to supplement with one that's really going to help repopulate a lot.
Oh, this is the first time I'm hearing about Restoriflora. I know Microbiome Labs, but that's actually really good information. I'll link to that in the show notes. So then you do that. Do you do that one post or during or both?
You could do both. I've had people do both. Definitely, definitely would continue to take it after for sure. And then you could switch to, so like after you finished the Restoriflora, then you could go back to their, like I usually use their, I like their Megaspore a lot. Then you can go back to taking that. You can use them interchangeably. There's a few different species changes, which is nice. And the fact that the Saccharomyces boulardii is in the Restoriflora is nice for a lot of that, mitigating a lot of that yeast production.
And then what is the connection? Is there a connection between gut health and insulin resistance?
Yeah, through the Acromantia species. Not specifically, but like kind of a lot of what we talked about earlier with how the blood sugar and insulin resistance can have, the metabolism has somewhat of a connection to the microbiome. And not just Acromantia, that's kind of like the prime driver for that. But there are other microbial species as well that we can easily wipe out through standard American diet, antibiotics, stuff like that, that is going to have your body having a harder time with proper blood sugar balance and insulin regulation.
So interesting. Okay, this one's from Katie Harris. She says, are there specific microbiome makeups, parasite infections, et cetera, that correlate with specific food intolerances? I remember reading something about H. pylori infections and nightshade intolerances, but haven't really found much about it since.
Off the top of my head, it's kind of hard to think of like an absolute for that one.
Yeah,
I'd say a big one can be dairy with parasites. I think that's just, I'm thinking of like things that I'm seeing clinically. I have not heard the nightshade with the H. pylori one.
I do think we always want to simplify things.
Like, I know.
We want a cause and we want a reaction. And that is what conventional medicine does, right? We isolate things,
right,
and we say, you have this, so let's provide this medication. And when you look at things holistically, it's very hard because everybody is different. You can do the same thing and do the same thing and react very differently to the things that I do. And so there's so much that, if you think about it, there's so much that makes up a person. Like,
I know,
so much from the day we were conceived to now. And so it's hard. It's really hard to make up these absolutes. I wish it was simpler.
I do too. And I wish that I could give people more of it, but it's true. It's when you get out of that A plus B equals C, like you have a bacterial infection, I give you antibiotics, you get better. Yeah. If you get out of that kind of more, like you said, conventional mindset, like when I'm constantly, my mind is just like constantly thinking of you have to be, when you're in a more functional and holistic space, we're not thinking as much of that. Cause we're like, but what if this? And like, but what if this and this, like, you know, there's so many, cause you're looking at the whole person. You're not just looking at one problem, one solution, you know, or one cause, one solution. You know, you're looking at so many different facets of things.
Yeah. It's hard. So this question is from Sarah. She says, thoughts on ozone therapy for gut health and the microbiome. Ozone therapy is, I feel like, becoming a lot more popular. I've heard more and more people mention it, specifically in dentistry. So like,
yes.
It comes with ozone, but is it something you can do for the gut too?
I feel like in terms of, so because ozone can have like kind of like antibacterial properties that might help with overgrowth, but in terms of like doing it as a regular for your gut health, I'm not sure if that's like the effect that we would always be wanting, like maybe in like a treatment for something like an overgrowth. I could see how that could be possible. To be honest, I'm not totally well-versed on, like, I know ozone, I've never done it.
Yeah.
But I could see how maybe that could be helpful in place of maybe something like an antimicrobial or something, but I don't think it would be something you'd want to do long term necessarily.
Yeah. This last question is from Mick McKinley 00. She says, I'm suddenly reacting violently to dairy. 9 months postpartum, on ideas on what could be causing this, I get severe cramps and bloating.
First thing that comes to my mind, I know that I've gone this before, but like when you have these allergies that just come out of nowhere, there's some type of overgrowth that would have caused that. And specifically with dairy, I see that definitely a good amount with parasites. So assuming you're not breastfeeding, or if you are still breastfeeding, maybe wait until you're done. But that would be something I would maybe look into, because I've seen that in so many people who are like, all of a sudden I used to eat dairy all the time. And all of a sudden, just one day, I just can't do it anymore. And there, mm-hmm. I mean, there's some type of microbial shift that did that. And whether it's a pathogen, parasite, whatever, there's something in the gut that we want to look at that could be causing that.
It is interesting because I hear that all the time, which is, and she didn't say this, but a lot of people say, well, I was fine before, you know, mm-hmm. they're like, I've been doing this forever. I've been eating this food forever. So what happened? And so we always want to pinpoint something. And it's so interesting because when you step back and take a look at it and just hearing you talk, it's wild to think that things should just stay consistent. You know, like the microbiome is so diverse and so complex, and things shift. Things mm-hmm. can change, and things that we are exposed to so greatly impact us on an internal level. So it's not out of the ordinary to think that a shift can happen mm-hmm. and a change can happen in how our body is responding or reacting to external factors.
Totally. And I mean, our gut microbiome is constantly regenerating. And depending on what our stressors are, like even just hearing that postpartum, like pregnancy is beautiful, amazing, wonderful. It could be very stressful on the body. And, you know, depending on what our experience is like, stress and all that type of stuff impact our, not only our microbiome, but our gut lining that can make us more susceptible to things. So there's so many different potential root causes.
Yeah, that's actually really good insight, because I did get a lot of questions about my gut has changed postpartum. And talk about the most stressful event you go through, which is like your body is drained. You give birth, you're drained on the back end, you're nutrient depleted. You know, you've maybe been in a harsh hospital setting or had some serious trauma with the birth. And now you're sleep deprived and you have no room to recover. As wonderful as it is to have your child, it's, you know, a lot of women experience, I mean, an onslaught of autoimmune conditions or new food intolerances or new digestive issues. Mm-hmm. Like you said, cortisol can really change that landscape, and stress changes the landscape. So
totally.
Yeah. So Dr. Haley, thank you so much for being here and going through all these questions. I'm so happy that we got through them all and we got to hit a lot of really great.
Yeah, me too.
I know you do you do a lot of online work with people, but in particular, I saw you have a membership site or a membership program in which you actually take people through parasite cleanses, which I think is so freaking cool. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I created my membership back in 2021, I think, because I just really wanted to kind of bridge the gap between like free stuff on social media, but also like maybe not like people kind of who I just want to be able to make functional medicine more accessible, right? Because I get that it's not always covered by insurance. It's not like, it's very different, right? So I created the membership to give people a little bit more access to me, access to a lot of courses, protocols, so that you can kind of work your way through a lot of these different things and trial and error things and learn a lot of different things about your body, because we don't know how to pay attention to our own body. So that's one thing I'm, you know, hopefully helping people work through. So one of the things in there is my parasite protocol, where I kind of walk you through in depth, like how we open our drainage pathways, the step-by-step how you need to do this. So you're not just jumping in blindly, you're understanding a lot about it. Plus you get access to me through kind of the platform to be able to ask questions and help you troubleshoot and figure out dosage and stuff. Because again, I don't want people to have a bad experience with something that can be really, really impactful for their health. And so mm-hmm. being able to, you know, really have all the info and the steps and ways that you can make your results sustainable is something that I think is really important. And, you know, I walk you through how to do all of that.
Love it. I just brought it up. It is drhaleyshoff.com/membership. I'll link to it in the show notes. But the thing, making functional medicine accessible, it's such a huge thing right now, because people are just overwhelmed.
I know.
First of all, to try to find somebody, but second, the cost and the prices. And so being able to take yourself guided through it with support, I think, I mean, honestly, that's what we do anyway, when you go see a functional medicine practitioner, a lot of them are still like, you know, let's just say they call themselves functional medicine practitioners or whatever. They still have a practice. They sit down with you. They talk to you about what to do. And then you go home and do it on your own. So mm-hmm. like, this is kind of exactly that.
Right. Like I still work people through it. Like they're like, but I really want to work with you one-on-one. I'm like, that's fine. We can do that. But it is all here laid out for you if you'd rather have that option too. You know, I mean, I work with people that, and I still, and that's why I like the one-on-one piece still is because sometimes people like, they just want to meet with someone and like go through stuff with them. So that, you know, it's nice to be able to have both. Yeah. But yeah, I was like, I'm saying the same thing over and over and over. And like, I'm teaching this. So like, let me take the teaching portion, put it in something, and then we can still help to make it more personalized to them if we need to.
And it looks like you have a whole lot of other stuff, including liver reset, metabolic makeover, parasite protocols. You even have coffee enemas, a section on that if you're dying to do that. So thank you so much, Dr. Haley, for doing all of this and sharing your thoughts. And I'm definitely excited for you and what you have coming up. And I'd love to have you back on to dive into maybe just hormones, you know?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So much to talk about. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so for more from me, it's coconutsandkettlebells.com. For more from Dr. Haley, it's DRHALIE, Schoff, SCHOFF.com. And there you'll also find she also has a podcast, which I think is so fun. Alpha Radio. Alpha
Health
Radio.
And Wellness Radio.
Alpha Health and Wellness Radio. I will link to all of that in the show notes. Thanks so much for being here, guys. I will talk to you next week.